Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, from episode number one, here we are at episode number two. The feedback online, unreal.
It was amazing. It's just been absolutely extraordinary. A great, just very, very positive. It's all that hard work, Ben, it's paying off.
It is paying off. Now, today on the program, we've got Michelle.
We have our food director.
And we've also got Rhonda Stewart talking about hypnotherapy.
And one of my favourite actresses, Betty White.
Oh, Betty White. Yes, of course. She's standing by in a couple of moments. And we've also got Tammy talking about travel, inspiring journey.
I was lucky enough to travel to the northwest of Australia, and it's absolutely fabulous, the beautiful Kimberleys.
And of course, if you'd like to win something today, Michael, what can we do online?
Well, today, if you go onto mindfood.com, there are 6 Pirori Coffee Berry Revitalizing Cleansers to win. For both men and women, you can both use them.
Fantastic.
Great product and a great prize.
This is Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road.
You know, growing up watching The Golden Girls was such a highlight for me, Michael.
Wasn't Betty White and Mary Tyler Moore as well? Or have I got that wrong?
That's right, exactly.
And she seems to be in all those sort of lovecom, you know, movies that you see. She sort of pops up.
Well, believe it or not, live on satellite here at Mind Food Radio, we've got her live and exclusive. So, Betty White, how do you feel at this age being so popular again?
Well, everybody says it's so nice to see you, but I never went away, guys. I've been working for 63 years, and it's I didn't realize it was coming back. I just have always been busy, sometimes not as visually, but thank goodness, always working, and it's such a privilege at this age. I'm going to be 90.
Now, Betty, it's a special birthday for you this year. You're 90. Do you have anything special planned?
I think NBC is planning something because I'm starting a new show, and I have a new book coming out, and so I think they're going to make kind of a big deal of it, you know. But and then I've worked with the Los Angeles Zoo for over 50 years, and they're planning a thing. I'm going to milk this birthday dry.
Now, Betty, tell us about your new book. What's that all about?
This is my 7th book. It's Betty and Friends, My Life at the Zoo, because I've worked, as I say, with the LA Zoo for over 50 years, and wonderful photographer has worked there almost that long, so he takes these incredible pictures. So all through the years, he's given me a copy of his. So I had all these pictures, and I thought, well, there must be something. So I put Tad's picture here, and then by being at the zoo for over 50 years, a lot of these animals are personal friends, these individual animals. So his picture is here, and then I write an anecdote about my relationship with that animal. It's called My Betty and Friends, My Life at the Zoo. So I'm excited because November 21st is publication day.
It's a bit of a rhetorical question, but what keeps you so young?
Good health. I'm blessed with good health, and I appreciate it with all my heart. I have a lot of energy, and I'm in a business I love, and it's not too often that you get the chance at this age to be doing what you love best, and with each new job, you make new friends, and pretty soon you keep collecting these lifelong friends, and then you don't have time to see them.
Betty, comparing Hollywood of yesteryear and that of, say, today's Hollywood, what's changed the most?
The thing that's changed the most is the audience. I think because when I started in 1949, everything was new, this whole television idea, and it had started and was very active in New York, but it hadn't moved to California yet. So it was so exciting and a whole new medium. Everybody was seeing things for the first time. Well, now everybody has grown up with the media so that they've heard every joke, they've seen every plot, they know from the way a show opens where it's going to go. That's a hard audience to surprise or a hard audience to keep interested. I think it's the audience that's more difficult to court now.
I can't believe we're talking to you, Betty. It's so cool and I'm so inspired by your story. Now, you know, what's the most important lesson you've learned in your life?
I think appreciation. I think to appreciate all this. Don't come home tired and start complaining about your life. Just look around and think, like, how did I get this lucky? And think of all the people all over the world who would sell their eye teeth to be doing what you're doing, and you have the privilege of doing it. You've got to taste that.
That's Betty White's story. Quite inspiring, isn't
it,
Michael?
How cool is she? She's so cool, isn't she? And 90. You know, amazing.
And 90 to be doing all that still.
I know. It's
and talking to us today via satellite. I mean, you know, imagine all the people standing around her.
Pretty extraordinary.
What an exclusive, though.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Did you ever get involved in a fight at school and felt that you'd achieve something in your life?
No, I'm anti-violence, but I've got to tell you, our next guest, Jeff Payne, you've made a whole show out of it.
Yes, I have. And it's not a glorification of that. It's actually ugly domestic disputes that got way out of hand, and I ended up in anger management.
What happened?
I actually assaulted my neighbour in the middle of the night after this very ugly thing. It was 100% my fault. I went into the driveway and shouted at them and shouldn't have been there. The court said, you're an idiot, but you're not a threat to society, so we're going to send you to one day anger management course.
Oh.
And I went there and I sat down, and these guys were sat in a circle, and I didn't know what to expect, and they started opening up about their issues and what happened and all that sort of stuff, and I thought, this is absolutely gold. So I rushed out to the car, grabbed a notebook, and started taking notes.
I think comedy is an interesting way to talk about sensitive topics, so you've made a show out of this.
I have. It's called Unpack This, because we were told we were going to unpack. That's the kind of language they used. All of us in the room are going to unpack about life. And I play three of the men in the room, and a friend of mine, Ross Daniels, plays the other three men, so we swap chairs, we jump between characters. And we've got Sid Brisbane, who's the male social worker, and Michelle Nussie is the female social worker, wrangling all of these different men in the room. And it's based on the actual class I went to, of course, but I've kind of played with a few of the characters. You know, names have been changed to protect the idiots, that sort of thing. It's an exploration of what goes on in an anger management class and the issues it brings up.
How does it make you feel, though, you know, doing something that was not great and you're obviously not proud of it, now kind of coming out the other end and making a show of it and having people laugh at it?
Well, I think it's the way I deal with the story and tell the story and communicate. As they say, you know, most art is just life prompts you to do something that you've got to share with people, and that's what happened in my case.
And some of the people there or in the play yourself, in terms of the anger management and the anger issues, what were some of them that you've...
Well, there seemed to be two groups. There were first-timers like myself who found themselves in this situation where they made a terrible mistake and took the law into their own hands and you know, had to face up to that. And there were others who'd been through the whole, you know, there were guys there that come straight out of prison. There was one guy that had actually said, I've got a history of violence and anger, I can't control it, and I need to because I'm this close to going, you know, being locked up.
Right.
So there were sort of clean skins and people who'd been through the system before. And what's interesting in the play is that the so-called clean skins are the ones that actually end up struggling and having a harder time because the facilitator really zoned in on us. Mm. And I don't know whether it's because he regarded the others as a lost cause or just grateful for the fact that they were simply there. But in terms of discussion, we were the ones that really had to bend over backwards to kind of explain what had gone on. And a lot of the comedy comes from the PC manipulative language that they have to use in these classes, because you can't have an opinion, you can have a perception. So if someone doesn't like your opinion, they'll say, well, that's just your perception. But, of course, they have their own perceptions, which we couldn't argue with.
Jeff, I'm interested, though. Like, you know, your career as an actor, and, I mean, in acting, it's all about acting. So
Yeah. This
was pretty much real life. So as an actor sitting there in this course,
yeah,
it must have been quite confronting.
Well, it sort of was, but it was also pretty fascinating for me, you know, as someone that writes as well. I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is fascinating stuff. When else would I actually, you know, I'm being arrested now. I'm being fingerprinted now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to court now. And it is interesting to do that, except that you are the idiot that's actually doing all of that sort of stuff. So I was split between someone who was experiencing it and finding that interesting and actually being the person who's going through it at the same time.
How are relations with the neighbours now?
Well, pretty good. We moved.
The
next thing we did was sell the house.
Yeah. So, Jeff, for people wanting to go to the show, where's it playing?
It's at Chapel Off Chapel. That's in Paran, and it's on during the Comedy Festival. Starts April 11 at Chapel Off Chapel, and it's called Unpack This.
And all the details, you can go to mindfood.com.
You can indeed, or you can go to the Chapel Off Chapel website, and they'll have it there as well.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jeff.
No worries. Thank you.
This is Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking.
Michael, you're looking very zen-like at the moment. You're in a bit of a calm state.
I sure am. Well, do you know what? We launched Mind Food Relaxation CDs probably 5-6 months ago.
And yeah.
There are so many people zened out there now because...
But there's a lot of stress, isn't there?
Oh, there is. And the thing is, they are absolutely extraordinary. We worked with a very close friend of mine, Rhonda Stewart, who heads up the Australian College of Hypnotherapy. Are you there, Rhonda?
I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, look, it's great to have you on board. And listen, you know, the CDs have gone like gangbusters, but tell us a little bit about the college and what you do.
I run the Australian College of Clinical Hypnotherapy, and I teach and train people into being professionals in the industry of hypnosis and in neurolinguistic programming. Mm.
Now, you have a whole range of clients, though, don't you? So what are people coming to you mainly for?
I see a lot of people with stress, and that can lead to anxiety and phobia.
Right.
And I do a lot of work with families and children.
Now, you've had some extraordinary turnarounds with children, haven't you?
Amazing turnarounds with children, absolutely.
Are they a little bit more open, do you think, in terms of this technique?
Yeah, I do. I think they're much more in the design of practically applying. And a lot of what we do is designed around self-help tools as well that you give your client to take away.
Hmm.
And children seem to adapt more to them.
So do people have to hit rock bottom before, you know, do they have to be severely stressed out to come to you and then, I mean, because it's a big deal. You're stressed, your anxiety is heightened, and then on top of it you've got phobias. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't be really proud about talking about that stuff, so they hide it for a long time before they probably get to you.
No, it's true. I mean, we get people at different points, but you're quite right. It's normally when it's really having an effect on them that they decide, I need to do something about this. And hypnotherapy is the fastest acting model of therapy for things like anxiety and stress. It's renowned throughout the world for being the most effective treatment for stress.
So what type of phobias would people come with?
I get a large number of people that have problems driving over a bridge, of all things.
Oh, wow.
We get people that have difficulty getting into lifts. I get clients that have difficulty being in a room with more than a couple of people. They have phobias about presenting or about being put on the spot for communication in their workplace.
Have you seen a growing trend? I know you've been doing this for many years. Have you seen a growing trend of a, you know, a certain phobia?
Yes, definitely. And I'd say that's anxiety, work-related anxiety.
Mm.
Definitely a growing trend.
So from your perspective, mm-hmm. what should people be doing to take control of their lives?
Looking at outlets that actually stimulate de-stressing, and that can be things like swimming, meditation, yoga, listening to our CDs.
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that should be at the top of that list,
that
Rhonda.
That should be at the top, I agree.
So the CDs were created, so the power of music is very powerful in the process of healing, isn't it?
Oh, look, it really is. I believe that music is definitely the healer of our souls. And our CDs are designed to be put on without listened to, so that they're actually working on resetting our sleep cycles and really communicating with that unconscious person and stimulating some response into new resourcefulness.
So they're not music CDs, they're more spoken word, are they?
They're both. There's music in the background, but it's actually spoken, yeah. Mm. And it's not in a language that you'd consciously sit and listen to and make sense of. It's really designed for your unconscious mind to get a sense of what's not working for you and what it could actually do a better job at.
I know those people that have bought the Mind Food CDs, it's really helped them, so thanks for that.
Thank you.
You can go online and watch Rhonda. We've got an interview online at mindfood.com. Thanks a lot, Rhonda Stewart from the Australian College of Hypnotherapy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm feeling very relaxed, Michael.
I'm ready for nine-nines.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
I love Rhonda Stewart. I'm zenned out as we speak.
You look so relaxed.
You know, it's amazing, though, how many people really do need help like that. It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Well, I think, as she said, one of the biggest growth in terms of clients was the whole, you know, anxiousness in and around jobs and careers.
Yeah. I love holidaying. You've got a story coming up about the Kimberleys. What's your favourite destination?
Oh, well, you know, I've got to say the Kimberleys was very special. We went into Aboriginal communities. Everywhere we stayed, it was all about ecotourism. And just from a landscape point of view, it's so beautiful. You know, the sunsets, yeah, and sunrises, and the colour of the dirt and the soil. And then you've got the most spectacular beaches. You know, it really is spectacular.
Yeah. Ayers Rock was like that. I went there and I just couldn't believe the colours.
Is that one of your favourite destinations?
Yeah, I think it would have to be. And like, you see things in the wild like budgies. But
really?
So many different colours of
them. In the middle
of
Australia?
In the middle of Australia.
Has someone let them out?
Probably. Who let them out? Who let the dogs out?
Who let the budgie
out? Coming up right here on Mind Food Radio, we're travelling and we've also got David not too far away with his story, Big Fat Lies, right here at your favourite station. All right, Michael, our next segment here, you've actually had the privilege of going on an inspiring journey. What's that all about?
I have. Well, I have always wanted to go to the Kimberleys in terms of the northwest of Australia.
Yep.
There is a company that has created these journeys, and, you know, I have to be honest, when I said to my family and friends, I'm going to go in a coach on a journey around the outback, they went, "You're mad."
Mad.
It'll be full of lots of old people, and it was nothing like that. And look, I'd like to welcome to the show the Managing Director of Inspiring Journeys. Tammy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Michael.
Now, where did this idea and concept come from?
Well, essentially, we looked at a full review of the Australian travel market, and really what it comes down to is it's generational. We saw a gap in the market. The new generation of traveller is got a different view of the world, and they're really wanting a different type of experience. Hence, Inspiring Journeys was born, and we developed a very different style of travel, essentially a lot more choice, focusing on flexibility and freedom around what we're offering. We obviously use a lot of the luxury accommodation that are in remote locations, but are all eco-friendly, and we've certainly done a lot of work with our own conservation foundation in the Kimberley region with the Indigenous. We've had a 3-year project there, so we're certainly, Inspiring Journeys is very much entrenched in trying to make a difference.
So Tammy, talk us through like one of the tours. Say I want to go into the Kimberleys. So where do we go to, and what sort of things are we going to experience here? What are we going to learn, and what are we going to discover?
You get to see, you know, Edith Falls, Catherine Gorge. You get to do a scenic flight over the Mitchell River. We fly via helicopter all of our travellers into Mitchell Falls, a stunning location. Visit El Cuestro Wilderness National Park. So there's a lot of things that you discover, but you also get to do a lot of walking tours through the Bungle Bungles. And obviously there is plenty of time to relax, whether it's in Mitchell Falls or Zabidi Thermal Springs. You go to lots of swimming holes, and also obviously there's a lot of beach time on the west coast, whether you're staying at Eco Beach or Cape Levique. So there is a real opportunity for travellers to customise their experience.
Are they expensive or are they affordable for the everyday person?
Well, our smallest trip is a 3-day journey that is in the top end, and that starts from $1,679 per person.
But that's everything, Tammy, isn't
that's
it?
That's pretty cool.
And that is everything. So, you know, you're looking at your transport and your accommodation, your meals. There's a lot of inclusion in terms of
we can afford
the
that,
highlights.
Michael. Yeah, yeah. We can afford that one.
So essentially, I mean, the Kimberleys is obviously a longer journey. It's once you start going across the Kimberleys, you really need to go from coast to coast. And obviously that is a 14-day journey, so that is a much longer journey.
Well, Tammy, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us on the journey.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Okay, now we're talking fitness, Michael. I've been doing lots of walking of late. I've walked 14 Ks in the last 2 days.
That's impressive.
It is pretty good.
And so unlike you.
It's so unlike me.
There is the most amazing book that's landed on my desk, Big Fat Lies, How the Diet Industry is Making You Sick, Fat and Poor. And we have joining the show with us today, David Gillespie, the author of that book. Hi, David.
G'day.
Now, that's a pretty gutsy headline and claim.
I guess it sort of made itself in that what the book's about are a lot of the things that we are told to do, which make no difference whatsoever, and I'll list them for you shortly, and in fact some of them can even be quite harmful. And then it talks about two things which really do make an awful lot of difference. And big fat lies just seem to fall out of it once you know what the book's about. So
I love your email here, sweetpoison.com.au.
Yeah.
You talk about you're a recovering corporate lawyer and co-founder of a successful software company and consultant to the IT industry. So did something happen to you that inspired this book?
Not so much that book, but the book before it, which was Sweet Poison, which was about my story, how I'd lost 40 kilos just by doing one simple thing, which was cutting out sugar. I didn't do anything else. I didn't suddenly start exercising, not that I was a great exerciser to begin with, but I just did that, and I lost 40 kilos, and I've stayed that weight now for 8 years.
Use a lot of sugar, though, in your diet? Like, were you sort of excessive in the use of sugar?
You know what? If someone had asked me that beforehand, I would have said, absolutely not. I don't put sugar in my tea or my coffee. I don't put sugar on my breakfast cereal. But when you actually take the packets of food out of the cupboard and have a look at the labels on them, you suddenly realize you're eating an awful lot of sugar. In fact, I calculated that I was eating probably well over a kilo of sugar a week, even though I didn't even have a sugar bowl.
So tell me, my doctor reckons white sugar's like the worst drug in the world. Like, he reckons it's that's how bad it is.
Yep.
What were the side effects when you got rid of the sugar? Did you have terrible headaches?
When you go through, there's a definite withdrawal period. It is exactly the same as nicotine. People who've given up smoking and then done this tell me that this is exactly the same. Ooh. I never smoke, so I don't know. But when you go through it, it feels like you're giving up a drug. You have mood swings, you have depression, you have the shakes, you have cravings. And this is weird. This is supposed to be just a food, but it's not. There is a definite addiction cycle. It takes 2 to 4 weeks to get through that withdrawal period before you start feeling normal again.
So you would have had to, though, once you went through your pantry and you started reading labels and things like that, you would have had to get rid of a lot of food.
You have to go to the supermarket and you have to consciously set a rule. And the rule I set, and it turns out to be a pretty useful one, is that if you look at the label and you look at the 100 per 100 gram listing for food, for sugar, you'll see the sugar line there. It should be less than 3. So less than 3 grams per 100 of sugar in the food. Now, if you do that, you'll find you come out with a very, very short list of foods. In fact, you could probably write them quite safely on the back of a postage stamp. So, for example, barbecue sauce, more than half sugar. In fact, it's the primary ingredient in barbecue sauce. So it's things like that that really catch you out, and you think, gosh, I didn't even think that as being a sweet food.
Does sugar affect cells?
It does, but the other half of what the book's about, which is polyunsaturated fats, have a much more dramatic effect on ourselves.
Now, what can we find that in? Just tell our listeners what you can find that in terms
of
our
product. Polyunsaturated fats are the things that all the health authorities have been telling us to eat for the last 40 years. So they've been saying, stay away from the animal fats, eat all lots of vegetable oils. Well, the strange thing is that there's no such thing as a vegetable oil. You can't get oil out of a vegetable. What they're actually telling you to eat is seed oils. Canola oil, soy oil, things like that. Those are the things that are being put into the so-called healthy foods that we are eating. Those oils get integrated into our cell structure and become cancerous.
So the book's called Big Fat Lies, How the Diet Industry is Making You Sick, Fat and Poor. David Gillespie, thanks for coming on the show today.
Pleasure.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
In the magazine, you do some really cool things, and one of them's called My Story. So what's that all about?
Well, that's one of the most popular stories in the magazine and also online, and it's basically people's story. They might be doing anything from, you know, getting over alcoholism or addiction. They might have started a charity. Mm. But it's those sort of real people out there that you read about and think, gosh, I could do something like that, you know, and it really makes people think. But the guy we've got on the line has done an extraordinary thing. Are you there, Andrea?
Yes, I am. Hello.
How are you? Why don't you tell us your story?
Well, my story just happened a little bit by coincidence. As I was traveling in Pakistan for a private project, a photographic project I was working on in 2008, and I was visiting the northern area of Pakistan, and amongst one of my many tours, I visited a school, and I was quite appalled to see in what conditions the kids are trying to learn the basics.
So you had no prior experience about schools or charity or anything like that?
Absolutely nothing.
So what did you do? Tell us exactly what you did next.
I was just thinking about it, and then all of a sudden I just got up, picked up the phone, called my guide, and I said, look, I want to help the schools, I want to start a charity, I want to raise money through friends and family and people who know me. Can you help me? And especially, how much are you going to cost me? Because I have to put that in the balance to make it worth it. And we had a chat about it. And in the end, he said, no, Andrea, no more business between us. You're part of the family now. You stay with us. So the expenses are to a minimum. And we can help the schools. And, you know, a lot of people made some donations. We had big donations, small donations. But it just added up. So the first year, we collected $6,000. And in May of 2011, I went back to Pakistan just a couple of days after they got bin Laden. And we just started giving out whatever the schools needed. So my guide did the groundwork. I told him how much money we had. And he went to some local community schools up in his area, in the northern area of Pakistan, and just said, what do you need? And a lot of them said, look, we need benches, we need desks, we need windows to close the windows, glass for the windows, we need cement bags to fix the roof and all that kind of stuff. So we ended up helping three schools. We had two local carpenters make the benches. So we had 80 benches and 80 desks that could sit three kids each. And then when I got there, I personally paid the carpenters because I'm very wary that money can get, quote-unquote, lost when you're going in those areas. So I just told him, I said, look, you give your word, I come to pay. And he's like, yep, absolutely, that's fine with me. And the reception from the school kids, the locals, the principals of the school, and especially the elder people of the village was extremely overwhelming. And everybody was so grateful and so kind. And I wasn't expecting such a reaction. So that was the first year. And now I'm going back at the beginning of May of this year for 2 weeks, and we're going to help four different schools. Same thing, they all want furniture, they need materials to fix the schools because the structure exists. Many schools are closed because of the lack of money, because they don't have electricity, they don't have light bulbs. Kids sit on bare floor cement. So
can you talk us through what a person would live like in Pakistan?
Look, in the areas that I've visited up north, it's just agriculture and farming. So, you know, when it's time to, I don't know, collect the peaches or the apricots from the trees or go work in the field, very often the women are the ones who do all the work. So if they have to choose between sending a girl to school or sending her in the field so the family can survive, unfortunately, very often education takes second place.
Where do they find the teachers from?
The teachers are local. Many teachers, which is a nice thing to see, have been to school, have gone to bigger cities to finish their education, and many of them come back because that's where their family is, and now they're teaching.
It's an extraordinary thing you're doing, and it's a great My Story. On mindfood.com, we're going to run a gallery of some of your images of, you know, your trips and travels to Pakistan. But I just want to congratulate you and your wife. It's, you know, you're an everyday guy doing an extraordinary thing, and I really take my hat off to you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, we're talking restaurants, chefs, famous people. I'm stoked to be here.
Ha, ha, ha.
Who have we got on the line,
Al
Michael?
Al Brown, and of course, a really successful cookbook. Al, how are you? And it's called, what is it called? Stoked.
Very well. Thanks for calling, Ken and Michael.
A lot of our listeners would know you from your great TV show on New Zealand, Get Fresh, where you travel around New Zealand, you know, meeting a lot of the locals and cooking local produce. But you're here in Australia, and, you know, perhaps are you going to launch something over here?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying being over here. I'm actually having a look at a space down in Adelaide. I'm in Adelaide at the moment. And the idea is maybe coming on board here with Sky City and giving them a bit of a ramp up in the old railway station, and maybe putting in a similar sort of outlet or gas to what I've done in Auckland, which is Depot, you know, sort of fast and furious, casual and fun. So like the area, like what I'm seeing, you know, great produce. Went down to the market yesterday, couldn't believe my eyes. And the idea of tucking into some of the great Aussie products really excites me.
Your recipes are very easy to follow, and of course, you know, it's our philosophy in terms of using ingredients from in season. Do you have a favourite ingredient?
I love seasons. You know, I just love, but I like things to be ripe. You know, I think sometimes that we actually, when the first of, you know, produce comes in at the start of the season, you know, for asparagus, you know, like asparagus, for instance, I'll never buy it immediately. I'll let it, you know, I'll tuck into it when it's 2 or 3 weeks into the market, because I sort of believe that the first produce is never as good as sort of right in the middle of the season. But, you know, a favourite, oh, gosh. I mean, I tried a greengage plum down at the market yesterday that just blew my mind.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I mean, it's basically what the last thing that's been in my mouth is normally my favourite.
But at the end of the day, you say sharing food, trading stories, and having a laugh with good people is what it's all about.
Yeah, I think food's all about people and place, and you know, if you think about some of the great meals that you've had, you know, I can guarantee it'll be either you with loved ones or with great friends having an absolute ball of a time, or you're in a very special place, you know, or outside, or in a great environment, or eating on a beach very close to the source.
Yeah.
You know, my food's always been about, you know, pretty much simplicity, but as I say, people and place makes the food taste better for some reason.
But that whole dining experience has really changed over the last few years. You know, that very high-end dining experience, although it's there, and I think it's probably a key part of, you know, going out, but a lot of people really aren't doing that so much now, are they?
Both countries, well, certainly New Zealand, have gone from pretty much a culinary wasteland of 40 years ago to being in a position where they're very proud of what we've achieved. But I think, you know, that we've sort of tried to take on the world, but now we're sort of finding ourselves a little bit more comfortable in our skin, and realizing that what the Aussies and the Kiwis do so well is casual. And, you know, we don't really like formality. We like doing things very, very well. We like things to taste great. We're very proud of producing great product and cooking it well. But I think that we enjoy it more when it's, you know, in a casual sort of setting.
And I think you've captured that at Depot. You know, the food is fantastic, but you walk in there, is such a great vibe. You know, as soon as you walk in, you think, oh, here we go. You know, we're in for a good night.
But the main thing that gives any of these places a bit of greatness, I think, is the people. And, you know, we're just not interested in too cool for school. We want, you know, our waiters to be sort of knowledgeable but fun and approachable, and sort of wholesome, you know. And I think that again is what suits us. We want attentive staff serving uncomplicated, tasty food.
Your book, Stoked, what does it really focus on?
Well, Stoked itself is really, it's a follow-on to my other book, Go Fish, so it's a bit more meat-orientated, but it's about cooking outdoors, and it's about celebrating and championing, I guess, cooking over hardwood and solid fuel like charcoal, and enjoying the sort of rewards of that. You know, it's real cooking. You're stepping up to the plate, you're having to light a fire, and you know, you're enjoying the rewards of the flavour from the smoke and the char on the food. And I think sometimes we get, you know, with everything's just too fast, and we're all a bit lazy, and we switch on the gas and cook over, you know, on a plate, and it doesn't give us anything except convenience.
Al Brown, thanks a lot for coming on to the show. Your beautiful book, Stoked, is now on sale. You can buy it in both New Zealand and Australia. Mind Food's done a review. There's an interview with Al online and in the current magazine. Thanks a lot, Al.
Hey, thanks for all the support, you guys, and the Mind Food rocks.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
That was a nice interview with Al Brown. I just like the way he talks about food. It's just, well, it's so normal.
Yeah, and he's so passionate, isn't he?
He is.
You know, as he travels around, you know, there he is in Adelaide, you know, sunny, and you get excited because he gets excited about food.
That's right, exactly. And I think, you know, if that's what a chef can do and get people inspired, that's a great thing.
But it's not just chefs. You know, this is the whole thing. I think if you really do cook with great ingredients, and ingredients and produce that are from the season and fresh produce, you can eat really healthy.
And that's a nice thing to do. You love cooking, though.
I love cooking. Love eating.
Yeah.
What did you have for dinner last night?
A Thai.
Did you?
Yeah.
We made one of the curries out of the latest edition, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I think cooking is something you have to find the time for. I've never really got into it. Maybe I need to spend more time getting into it.
Yeah, but you know, recipes are very easy to follow, and that's the key thing. Like, if you're a very ordered person, well, cooking's actually a great thing.
And I reckon all the blokes out there might be having a problem.
No, if you're a bit more creative, don't follow a recipe and get in there and try something, you know?
Fantastic. Now, coming up not too far away, we've got Michelle, and she's she's going to be talking all about...
rhubarb.
Fantastic. I'm always intrigued, though. When you take photographs of food, that's a real art, isn't it?
It is, and we've used the same team since we've launched. So, you know, the brief is very simple. Make sure you want to lick the page, rip it out and eat it now. You know, that's the key thing.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Well, of course, one of the most favourite things in Mind Food is the food, and we cook from in season because we think that's important, as it is, and we should be buying produce that not only is produced close to home, but also that's in season.
In season. And what's in season? Well, we've got Michelle on the line. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Exactly. What's it like being the food director of a magazine?
Oh, it's fantastic. We get to go to lots of interesting places and taste lots of lovely things.
Now, today in season,
what's in your basket?
Yeah, what ingredient
shopping
are we looking
basket.
At?
Yeah, your shopping basket.
This season we're looking at rhubarb, which is really in season. It's got a lovely long season. It comes in mid-January, and it's in season right through to May. So it's a perfect one to be eating in the hotter and colder months of the year.
Is rhubarb a superfood?
Yes, it is. It's a good source of antioxidants, potassium, vitamin C, and it's full of fiber.
Now, it's actually a vegetable, isn't it? I always thought, you know, it's often confused as a fruit.
No, it is a vegetable.
Ah.
But also, you can't eat the leaves, guys. We just eat the lovely stalks. So when you go shopping for your rhubarb, you've got to look for crisp, firm plant stalks with a nice bright colour.
So tell me, what's in the leaves that's not good for you? Is it poisonous or something?
Yeah, there's an acid in the content.
Okay. Now, what would you do with rhubarb tonight? If we were shopping today, what could we do at home with rhubarb?
We could do a vanilla roasted rhubarb with rice pudding tonight.
That's unbelievable.
Or we've got a rhubarb and raspberry shortcake, which is nice if you've got friends coming over on a Sunday, a beautiful afternoon tea treat for everybody.
Now, those recipes are on mindfood.com. Very easy to follow. Thanks, Michelle.
It's okay, Michael.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, that's a wrap, as they say, in the business from Betty White. What's happening next week on the program?
Well, we've got a really interesting interview with a nutritionist, Sandy Rogers, and she's been practicing many, many years, and it's all about immunity or boosting your immunity for the colder months across winter.
And the Starlight Foundation.
That's right. That's a really interesting charity, and we talk to the CEO in and around how we can get it and you know, help that as a volunteer.
And we also talk with Lindy Milana, Taste of Greece.
Well, a very successful TV show, and of course a brand new cookbook. So all that and much, much more coming up on next week's show.
And don't forget to go onto mindfood.com if you'd like to send an email or win our fabulous prize again,
the Pirori Coffee Berry.
Until next week, that's Mind Food Radio. I'm Ben Starr.
I'm Michael McHugh.
See you later.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking, was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.